I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com. Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Sylvain Wet, who is one of the few Japanese sake experts in France. Also, he is the first French sake samurai, which is appointed by the Japan Sake Brewers Association Junior Council. And Sylvain is also the organizer of the major sake event, Salon du Sake, held annually in Paris. So today we'll discuss how the Sylvain got into the sake world, and what sake French people are drinking in the Kingdom of Wine, and the upcoming Salon du Sake, and much, much more. But quickly before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about the topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. And you can email us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikotaema.com. Now let's start a conversation with Sylvain Wet. So, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Akiko-san. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So, I keep hearing your name, even being in the USA.
Really?
So you are doing a lot of work for promoting sake in France.
Thank you.
My first question, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Well, obviously I'm French. I was born and raised not too far from Paris on the west side. As a kid, actually, I was a very difficult kid regarding everything with food. I was quite adventurous in many areas of my life, but food was not at all at it. So up until I was a teenager, and actually up until I went to Japan for the first time, I would only eat like pasta and French fries and meats and burgers, ham and maybe chicken. That was it. I hated fish, I hated vegetables, I hated fruits. Everything that was not like kid food wasn't from me. But when I got a chance to go to Japan about a bit more than 20 years ago, it changed entirely the way I discovered food. And actually, first time I came to Japan, I discovered that my most favorite food is fish, but raw fish.
Mm.
And coming back to France after my first trip, it changed the way I would eat.
Interesting. So literally, the Japan changed your diet and the whole.
Yes, exactly. We'll talk more about that. But my whole discovery of Japanese culture and Japanese food, Japanese sake, changed a lot of things in my life. Up until it went, it became my job, an everyday job.
Mm. Wow, impressive. Well, actually, I had a kind of same. Difficulty eating things, and once I start traveling abroad, everything changes. So,
right.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Different culture changes who you are. I heard that you got into Japanese culture through practicing Aikido. So, could you tell us about that?
Yes, this is also a quite funny story because I was very good at mathematics and computers and physics. So when I went to university, my major was computers, and I was studying mathematics and physics. But at the same time, I started doing dance, contemporary dance, starting on the side. Up to a point, I was studying dance 30 hours a week.
Wow.
Whereas at university, I only had like 20 hours of mathematics and regular physics and computers studies. When I was about to graduate, I just, instead of going to a sound engineer school, I just decided to try to become a dancer. And actually, I've been a professional dancer for 10 years.
Wow.
And during those 10 years of dancing with many small company, that was the explosion of contemporary dance in France at that time, I discovered Aikido, which is a Japanese martial art. And of course, I wanted to discover the country where that martial art was born. And that got me to go to Japan.
Mm.
But actually, I've been studying Aikido over 30 years now.
Wow.
And I even teach it in Paris until 2009. Mm. After that, I got too busy with my activities with sake, and I stopped teaching it.
Interesting. Yeah, your life has been really transforming many times already.
Yeah. And then what like most of the journalists in Japan or in France or in Europe, when they ask me about my career, they're very strange, because I started as a computer geek and then turned into a contemporary dancer.
It's the complete opposite.
And that brought me to spread this culture of sake all over France and Europe, so which is kind of a strange journey, but a very fun one.
Right, maybe you go to Mars next time. So, next stage. Let's talk about the sake. So, how did you get into sake?
Yes, well, the thing is, in my family, my father drinks wine, but I wasn't that interested into any kind of drink and as I said before, in any kind of food that was not the food I already knew. But because I was studying Aikido and I wanted to go to Japan, of course, with my friends from Aikido and actually some of my friends from dance companies, they all were very into wine and good food. And they are my friends who introduced me to good food and good wines. So when we went together to Japan, not really to do Aikido, but mostly to discover the country where it was born, I just wanted to give them back something to them. And nobody knew anything about sake. So I took on myself to try to learn a bit more about sake, how to read the labels, different types of sake, and have my friends discovering sake. And then I got... From the first time, I got so much in love. I fell in love with Japanese culture, Japanese food, Japanese people, and of course Japanese sake, that I kept going to Japan. And every time I would bring back some, sake bottles and introduce them to my friend, the friend of my friends.
Interesting. Well, naturally, because you're from France, you know, one of our people would be very pleased to have could be some equivalent of wine. That's why you decided to learn, study about sake, and then teach your friends?
Yes, of course. That was kind of a parallel thing. But mostly for me, it was because I knew almost nothing about wine, and because my friend knew a lot about wine, that I wanted to tell them about sake. But
right.
to teach them about sake, I had to learn first myself.
Right. Mm.
And of course, at that time, there was very little information in French about sake. In English, there were some websites, some blogs, a few books.
Mm.
Like the first book I read about sake was a book by a British sake brewer called Philip Harper.
Mm.
And that was my first discovery of sake. And then I was visiting Nagoya, I think, for the Aichi Expo. I forgot what years it was, but an Italian friend of mine introduced me to one of his, he was living in Nagoya at that time, a Japanese friend, and that we became very good friends, and that friend introduced me to some nice izakaya and sake brands from the region, and he offered me a book by John Gardner.
Oh.
And I discovered that this fabulous guy was not only very knowledgeable about sake, but also was teaching regularly in Japan, doing some seminars in English, because at that time I couldn't speak Japanese.
Mm.
So I started to go to Japan, not only to discover sake by myself, but to do professional courses, the first one being John Gardner's ones.
For listeners who's not familiar with John Gardner, he's the master of sake who can teach in English. And almost all sake experts, I think they have to go through John Gardner's classes.
Yes, I think especially from America, but for all English speakers, John was one of the first. He was a journalist. He went to Japan to teach English, actually. He wrote from Japan Times and some newspapers. And he became the most well-known English sake experts. Mm. And he was the first one to spread that knowledge of sake in English to so many people. Right. And I don't know how many students he's had. Now, he's of course one of my first teachers. He's a very great friend, because actually when I started to learn sake with him, he started to learn Aikido in Japan.
Oh.
So he was like my sensei for sake, but he would always turn to me as a kind of sensei for Aikido. So that was very fun exchanging about his knowledge of sake and my knowledge of Aikido and my practice of Aikido.
Interesting. Yeah, John came to the show a long time ago and I'm trying to hump it back, but he's very busy. He's now back in the States.
Yes, he moved back with his family in the States. And now he's commuting between America and Japan all the time.
Mm, right. So, and what was the moment that you had a sake, like, this is something special?
Well, the one thing you need to know, because not everyone knows that, is that in France, but not only in France, all over Europe, when we hear the word sake, we don't think about Japanese sake, actually. Most people think about high alcohol drinks that is offered at the end of the meal, mostly in Asian restaurants, but even sushi place that are a lot Chinese owned or owned by non-Japanese, and because everyone knows the word sake, they think it's simpler to say please have some sake, and people don't even pay for it. It's just a gesture to thank the customers for being a customer at that restaurant. So most people, when they hear sake, and I was part of those people, we think it's a very strong spirit, very high. Most of the time, not the best one, because it's for free, so it's a kind of cheap one. So the first sake I had it in France in those circumstances, and for me, I was not interesting. It was not good. It was too strong. But the first time I went to Japan, it was like 1999, I think, or 2000. I had a chance to go there for 3 weeks, visiting the country. I started to, actually, a year before that, to prepare myself, I started learning Japanese language. Mm. But then a month later, I went back with my Aikido masters and some other Aikido students. And the first evening, we went with my Aikido master to a restaurant. It was a tempura restaurant, and they had like 10 different sake on the menu, and we said let's try all of them. So we tried the 10 sakes, and for me that was such a discovery, because I had that image that sake was a strong alcohol, a spirit, but no, it was very closer to my knowledge of wine. And all the 10 different sake were so different, so elegant, so flavorful, so tasteful, that I remember that tasting, and that was the first time for me in Japan to discover real Japanese sake.
Right. Well, that's too sad that that free stuff can never be tasting good. So,
well, it depends who's offering it.
I know, yeah. Right? But yeah, it's like the sake bomb and that thing, and warm sake that's tasteless. That's all those things. Sake has a lot of challenges to kind of break the bad image existing.
Yes. And even now, it's been 20 years, and the main thing we have to fight, you mentioned that I was the first French person to receive the sake samurai titles, and most people ask me, what do you fight? And the only thing I have to fight is that bad knowledge, that bad image of sake. That's actually a wrong image, because the word sake is used for something that is not even Japanese. Mostly it's Asian spirits. Mm. And that's the kind of things I have to kill. I have to destroy that bad image. I'm not the only one, of course, helping doing that. But it's probably going to take 10 or maybe 20 more years so that everyone knows that sake is closer to wine than a spirit.
Mm. Right. And I think, and eventually sake by itself is something very distinctive from, distinct from wine itself, because people like describing something as similar to something, right? Because it's comfortable. Yes. And that's the challenge of sake, and that's what you're doing. We could talk about the sound of sake that's, later, but
that's the one thing also very, very important. First, we have to, and even Japanese people, the brewers, we have to explain to them, to keep repeating to them, watch out. When you mention sake, people don't think about what you want to to introduce to them. They think about that other products. So you have to make sure that they understand it is not that. But then the next step is to have people understand that sake is not wine. Because it's closer, most people, most importers, most people say, you like sake, you like wine, you will like sake, it's the same. And now the trend is to drink sake in a wine glass, those kind of things. But I keep repeating that if the customers get used to looking up in sake what they like in wine, they will never discover what is real sake. Because they will like sake that is close to wine, but sake has a very wide range. We have lots of different types of sake. And I've been trying to get people to discover every type of sake. I don't import sake myself. I don't sell sake. So it's very easier for me to introduce all type of sake from all Japan. I don't have to promote one brand or one region because I have to sell them something. Though, not being an importer, not being a distributor, or not working for any brand or any brewing company in particular helped me a lot because I've kept that freedom to introduce all type of sake.
Right. Yeah, that's a very important position because I think all the sake should be treated equally, and some brands tend to be featured because they have more money or, you know, the size or that kind of thing really affects the future of the brewery. So, okay. And so you said you studied sake with the John Contner and all those, you know, the formal system. But how did you, I heard you have a lot of close relationships with sake breweries. So
yes, that's,
how did you do that?
That's the thing. Because, of course, I started learning sake in English, and John Gorners was one of my masters in that. But I read all the books I could find, looked it up on the web. But I was lucky enough, because I started learning a bit Japanese at that time, to be invited by sake brewers to learn how to make sake at their place. In particular, there was one called Diamond-san, Diamond Shuzo. He's a brewer from Osaka. And in 2009, I think, he started what he called the first internship for sake brewing in English. So that's a very small kura. They only had like three people working in the kura with him and the master brewer on top, so five people. And he invited five people, five foreigners, to work at the same time. And we spent one whole week. And the way he scheduled the things is that in 1 week, we would do every single task that is needed to make sake. Yeah. And he did that for some times, and it was too much work for such a small brewery. But recently, they started again to do that kind of internship.
Oh, wow.
So that was a whole first week. And actually, I keep explaining to people, I knew sake from seminars, I knew sake from books, I knew sake from drinking it. But there was a big shift in my understanding of sake. The first time I found my hand in the hot rice, getting out of the koshiki, like the steamer, I understood what it was to make sake. It was like not from my intellect, not from my thinking, but from my, actually I'm quite sensitive with heat on my hands, but having my hand in the hot rice, I got, and it was very cold outside and we were doing all the different tasks, but the first time was, oh my God, this is what sake is about. And that changed my understanding. And from there, I decided that I wanted to learn to visit more places. Actually, I've lost the count, but just over the past 5 years, I visited more than 300, 350 breweries in Japan.
Oh, wow.
But over the past 15, 20 years, I was lucky enough maybe to work at 10 or 15 different breweries. And whenever I have the time, even for one day or more, I try to get to be invited and work with the brewers in the brewery to understand the small differences.
Right, so they're willing to teach you because you are an educator of sake.
Yes, now I'm quite, especially since I got the sake samurai titles and doing the sake on sake and those things, most people know, I've heard of me, like you mentioned. But at that time when I started, nobody knew me. I was so passionate about it. I could speak a little Japanese. And actually, those sake brewers, it could be seen as a very secretive, very closed world, but not at all. They, when they understand maybe not the language, but the passion, when we can communicate, you know, from heart to heart, kokoro to kokoro, ne? We get together and they open their doors, they open their... Many times I visit places, sometimes with translators who was knowledgeable about sake, and I've heard that many times. What you ask one question, I have been wanting to know the answer to that question for 10 years. They never reply to me. You, this is the first time you come here. You're a foreigner. You ask for it, and they give you the answers.
Mm.
And that was not because I was a foreigner, part of it, but because we understood that we're passionate about the same thing.
Mm.
And there was something happening, something almost, I don't explain by myself. But so I got so many things from the brewers that in the end, I wanted to do more for them, not only for the Japanese national market, but for the market abroad, to help them to get to French market and European market.
Mm, right. So, do you often... how often do you go to Japan now?
Yes, I have to say I lost the count. But for example, last year was probably one of the time I went the most. I went to Japan 7 times.
Wow.
so I probably spent 5 or 6 months altogether visiting Japan. For many reasons, for introducing Salon du Sake, to learn more, to visit more breweries, but also, and we'll talk about that later, but I was hired to start a new international sake competition to be held in Japan. So there was very many opportunities. Actually, I do a lot of teaching. I do a lot of events in France, in Europe, sometimes in Japan. But also, I try to do some consulting between the Japanese companies, Brewers Association, the administrations, and their equivalent in France to build a bridge between Japan and Europe, Japan in France.
Mm.
So to do that, I need to go to Japan very often.
Right.
And actually, it was a hobby. I didn't want to make any money out of it, but I wanted to go to Japan more often. And I thought, because one thing I didn't mention, I started studying Aikido, but after... 5 or 6 years also I started learning what we call the way of tea, the tea ceremony. I studied in France with the Japanese teachers, and because of that also I wanted to come to Japan more often.
Yeah.
But I didn't think at that time that I could make a living out of being a tea teacher in France. But sake market, I knew what was going in sake market in the States, in Northern Europe, and I thought France would be the next step. It was like 10 years early, but 10 years, 15 years later, it paid off. And actually now France is a very fast-growing sake market in Europe.
Wow. So John Goldman kind of said the same thing. Like, if you like something, you try and pursue it, the door is open. Like, that's exactly what
happened. Yeah, exactly. And I think looking back at it, if I really wanted to make good money out of it, I would have choose a different job, because the first 5 or 6, 7 years I would use my own money to pay for the trips, to pay for everything. Now very often I'm invited or have a mission and people pay for my flights, pay for everything. So now my job allows me to go to Japan and I get paid to do that. But for almost 5 to 10 years, the first years I had to pay to go to Japan to study and to do those things.
Right. So follow your heart. That's what happens. And you also the first blogger about sake in French called Le Passion du Sake.
Yes.
So when did you start and why did you start the blog and what do you write about?
Well, I mentioned that sake brewing internship at Daimon Shuzo in 2009, I think. And one of the requirements to participate to that program was to blog about sake. And I knew nothing about blogging. I knew a bit about sake. But that pushed me into starting a blog. And at that time, yes, I got nihonshu.fr. Also sakejapone.fr, which is the same in French. And most brewers are very amazed when they see that I have nihonshu.fr, because nihonshu means Japanese sake in Japanese, of course. So I got that domain name and I started blogging. At first, I was explaining about my experiences in Japan and some sake events, sake promoting that I would attend, that I would organize. To be honest, over the past 2-3 years, I've been so busy with organizing Salon de Sake that is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, but the staff is still the same. Mm-hmm. We're all volunteers. Nobody makes any money out of Salon de Sake. Mm. I haven't been blogging a lot. Also, the SNS, the social networks such as Facebook, Twitters are more and more important. So now most of my posts on my blogs, I do them either on the Salon de Sake website or on the on the social networks. But I'm planning to remade that nihonshu.fr blog because first I'm doing more and more education programs that I want to promote on my own website. But also now I have so much experience on sake tasting and organizing events that I want to share that in a new way. So it's a work in progress.
Right. Well, that's important though. Like everybody now search on the internet, and then you really need to something in the language that's been really, you know, yet to come for sake education.
The thing for me, like especially teaching sake in French languages, lots of words. Like I mentioned, the use of the word sake is a misuse because people in France, all over Europe is almost the same, but mostly in France, they use sake for something that is not sake. Mm. But half of the vocabulary used for sake, for example, we say sake brewing or brew in English, which is entirely proper, but people tend to say brasserie or brasser, which is the translation of brewery or to brew in French. But it has an entirely meaning. Mm. It's only beer making or beer restaurants, those kind of things. So I had to retranslate many of the words that we use in French for sake, because otherwise you cannot get people to understand a drink or a culture, a making, if you use the wrong words. Mm. And to that, you need to speak Japanese and French. I'm not a professional translator, but I'm a professional sake expert. So I know sake well enough. I know French language and Japanese language well enough to decide or to make change in the French vocabulary we use for sake. Mm. This is very important, actually.
Right. Okay, so by the way, of course, we've been talking about how wine country France is. So how is the sake doing in a consumer market in France?
Well, of course, France, I would say, Italy, Spain are the same within Europe. We are wine countries. And this is also one of the things I keep repeating. We don't want sake to compete with wine. Mm. Because if we do make that kind of war competition, we kind of know who will win. Wine will always win because it's cheaper, it's closer to the culture, and people know it. So, of course, because of that wrong image of sake that people think is a spirit, we tend to quickly say, oh, sake is like wine. But very quickly, I add, but sake is not wine. Mm. Sake is not beer. Sake is not wine. It's not a rice wine. It's not a rice beer, as I hear very often. It's a specific type of drinks. And you want to understand it, you need to discover it by itself. Mm. So, of course, the type of sake that French people tend to like, first, is sake that is closer to wine. So sake, like we'd say, ginjo, daiginjo type of sake.
Like a fruitier.
Like a fruity, flowery sake that has strong aromas, closer to wine, to what they know. And of course, sake that is almost without any aromas, but that has very strong flavors, that is very good in mouth, or sake that you can drink hot or warm, are not the favorite of French people. But more and more people are discovering other type of sake than the Junmai Ginjo, Junmai Daiginjo type. That is not only closer to wine, but also very expensive type of sake. Mm. So with transportation and the different fees of the different companies working between Japan and France to import and then distribute sake, plus the what the restaurant owner, for example, want to make on each bottles, it makes one bottle very expensive in a restaurant. Mm. So it's very important that the consumer market is now able to discover as well other type of sake, which also happen to be cheaper type of sake, which is very good.
So like in New York, almost any you know, liquor shops have sake section, like at least 2 or 3 bottles on the shelf. So how's that in France?
Yes, well, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We used to say that America is always like 10 years in advance for the nutrients or whatever, sometimes even more. One thing, a French market is very special for that. The wine shop dealers, we call them cavists, are very important for the consumer. Even if you go buy your bottle of wine at the supermarket or at a wine fair, most people will first go to the wine shop dealers to ask for advices, to taste, discover new products.
Mm.
And we got brands like chains of wine shop dealers. We got lots of independent wine shop dealers. Like the chains, they do have like maybe one type of sake because they need to have one. But most of the time, if you go to those shops, you ask them what type of drink is it? And they say, well, it's a 40-degree spirit. Even if they sell real Japanese sake. And then you look at the bottle with them in the shop. Usually I go to the shops and try to play as if I don't know sake. And I say, oh, but it says 15 degrees. I'd say, oh, yes, look, it's not that strong. And then I ask them, how should I drink that? And they say, as an aperitif, as a digestive, which means at the end of the meal, which for me is insane.
Mm.
But this is like a sad story, I think. But more and more of those cavies, those wine shop dealers, have some interest in sake.
Mm.
And I see them coming to Salon du Sake. Like 2/3 of the visitors at Salon du Sake are professionals.
Mm.
And we have more and more wine sommelier, wine shop dealers that come to discover sake or to study more about the products. And in 5 to 10 years from now, I do hope that the wine shop dealer system market in France will have more and more sake, the way we can find sake here.
I'm curious, so like the distribution and regulation-wise, is sake easy to distribute in France, just like wine is distributed?
Yes, the thing is, most people would drink sake at restaurants. Of course, like Japanese food restaurants, and for a long time, people tend to think Japanese food was only sushi.
Mm.
Now, especially in the big cities, mostly like Paris and some others, we have lots of ramen shop, even okonomiyaki, and not some kaiseki, very high-end restaurants as well. But Paris is not London, for example, in that. But recently, we've seen lots of new type of Japanese food restaurants opening, and of course, they offer real Japanese sake.
Mm.
Even the cheap sushi-san that are Chinese or non-Japanese owned are starting to offer real Japanese sake.
Mm-hmm.
Very often like cheap industrial sake, but still Japanese sake. But in order to promote sake, actually, people got to discover sake in the new ways are mostly, I would say, Western food restaurants, like even Michelin star restaurants, one star, two star. Like last week, I was with a TV channel shooting a documentary on sake at the 3 Michelin star restaurants in Champagne region.
Wow.
So they have lots of champagne and wine, but the 3 Michelin star chefs was interested in sake.
Mm.
And most of the famous chefs, or even the simple like bistro, new type of cuisine, they have some interest in sake. Because one thing that is very important to say, of course, sake goes well with Japanese cuisine, but it pairs very well with Western cuisine, especially like French cuisine or Italian cuisine. And the recipe of a famous chef or non-famous goes very well with wine. But with sake, is it better or not? It's not about being better. It's different. And it allows people to rediscover even very famous food. At Salon du Sake, we do one of the most trendy events that we do. We do pairing workshops. For 1 hour, we pair 4 different plates, 4 different recipes with 4 sakes. This is one of the trendier things. And every year, we got different themes. And within those things, we rediscover like the very typical traditional French food with Japanese sake.
Right.
And people got amazed with that.
Yeah, actually, I've done a couple sake and cheese pairing classes in the past, and each time I organize, I go through all the sake and all the cheese, you know, different kinds of types of cheese, and it's amazing how naturally go together.
Yeah, you know, in France we have more cheese than we have days in a year, and of course sake and cheese goes very well.
Right.
Sometimes even better than wine, because it's very difficult to pair wine and wine and cheese.
Yeah, because there's no acidity, like sharp acidity, like wine or tannins.
Yes, exactly. So everything that could go bad in pairing with wine, it's easier with sake. And also we have some some types of sake, like Kimoto, Yamahai, they have a natural lactic acid. Mm. And those, of course, goes very well with the cheese. And
I think, in a way, to me, I don't know what to do. Then let's have some sake, like ginjo, daiginjo, or like, you know, the aged sake, koshu with goat cheese, the kind of, you know, you can get it right if you have sake.
Of course, most people who want to try sake, they say, oh, I love sake. At a restaurant, I would drink sake, but at home, I don't want to bring back sake because I don't cook Japanese food. So I try to explain to them very easy way to pair sake with Western food. And I've been pushing two different things. One is like very French typical cheese, European cheese. Cheese and sake goes very well. You don't need to cook. You just go to the cheesemonger. You buy some cheese. Mm. And it's quite easy to pair. And even the strongest cheese, you can find some good sake. It's a bit more difficult, but it pairs well.
Well, it's a good proof, right? Because the cheese is the most Western thing you can think of.
Exactly. The other thing is, you know, northwest and south of France, we have seas and oceans. So we got lots of seafood as well. And French people, they love oyster, especially for like Christmas or New Year's Eve, but almost all during the oyster season. And sake and seafood goes very well. Mm. And then for oyster, you don't have to cook. You can make a recipe out of oysters, but you simply can buy them. Of course, you need to open them, but you can even buy them already open, like in the big cities. Mm. So that's two very easy way to enjoy sake and food without having to cook yourself.
Mm, right. I think it's the way you can think of is, you know, sake is really freshness oriented. It's like, you know, nice rosé or something, and you can just pair easily with anything.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so let's quickly take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk about the upcoming major sake event, Salon du Sake. So please stay with us. Today's program is brought to you by Corin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. The knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com. Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs Podcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Sylvain Huet, who is one of the few Japanese sake experts in France. Also, he is the first French sake samurai, which is appointed by the Japan Sake Brewers Association Junior Council. So let's talk about Salon du Sake.
Yes.
So you are the organizer of Salon du Sake, which is an annual event held in Paris since 2013.
Exactly.
So what is Salon du Sake?
Well, Salon du Sake first is a 3 days event. We've been doing it for 2013, as you mentioned. There was 1 year we didn't do it. So this year is going to be the seventh? This is today the largest sake event outside of Japan, not only because it's a 3 days event, but because of the numbers of visitors. Last year we had more than 4,650 visitors
in three days. Wow.
Mostly from France, but of course we had many visitors from Europe and from other countries. We had visitors from 42 different countries last year, actually.
Wow.
And probably this year we're expecting more than 5,000 visitors from 50 countries. I had people already registered interesting from Greece or from Australia or from Canada coming to Paris for that event.
Mm.
So of course there are many booths with the we have all the importers, distributors from France and from Europe. We have lots of sake makers that are also participating because they already have some importers they want to promote their brand or they are looking for importers. We also have some regions or prefecture or sake brewing associations participating. This year we're going to have like sake associations or prefectures or regions. We have like 10 of them participating. So every year it's growing, growing. Right. But besides those tasting booths, we also have, and this is very important for me, lots of educational events from simple tastings to technical lectures or panel discussions on the sake making in Europe or the state of the market all over the countries in Europe. We do that. It's called the European Sake Summit. Mm. It's going to be the fifth time this year. We do lots of pairing workshop. We mentioned that before. We ask chefs or artisans to pick their best food or recipe, or sometimes to develop a new recipe with a bottle of sake that I gave them. And we also have lots of lectures on the tourism, everything about around sake culture as well, like tools to drink sake, ochoko, glass vessels, everything.
Mm, right. So sounds like in Europe, I think London is quite advanced as well, but other than that, in Europe, there aren't many opportunity to learn about sake, like sound sake.
Yes, the thing is, of course, Europe has been growing very quickly. The main market for sake outside of Japan is America, of course, and Asia is growing, is very big as well. But in terms of growth, Europe is growing as fast as Asia, actually,
wow.
Even if it's a smaller market. And France is a smaller market than the UK, but actually this is the second market in Europe, and within 1 or 2 years the two should be equivalent.
Wow.
Over the past 5 years, I made a study before we started Salon Sake in 2012. Between 2012 and 17, in 5 years the market went up in France by 238%. At the same time Europe went up by 125%, and the overall world went up by 109%.
Salon Sake really is doing something.
Well, it's not only Salon Sake, it's all dynamic. Of course, the work of the importers, the people coming from Japan promoting sake. But of course, especially since the Brexit, France is the center of Europe. But not only for that reason, because one of the reasons is, of course, France is known as a cultural country where food, lifestyle, and the food and drinks are a very important part of the cultures. Mm. And that's a very important market for the sake brewers, not only to sell their sake within that market, but also it helps doing the sales and promoting sake within Japan, where the young generation don't appreciate sake as they should.
Mm, right. So how many labels do you present at Salon de Sake?
Well, last year, officially, because some exhibitors bring more bottles than the list than they send in advance. But last year, we had almost about a bit more than 500 different sake labels.
Wow.
And the domain is sake. It's the European, actually Salon Sake is the short title. The full title is Salon Sake, European Fair for Sake and Japanese Drinks. We also have about 150 other Japanese drinks. Japanese whiskey is very trendy in France and Europe. We even have Japanese tea, of course, umeshu, shochu, all the drinks from Japan. And so last year we had about, 150 of those.
Wow.
We probably have like 600 different labels of sake this year, I think.
So who can present their sake to be at Salon Sake? Do you have to just apply?
Yes, exactly. As I mentioned before, people who apply are either importers, distributors from France and for Europe. We also have like individual sake brewers that want to participate to either develop their brands or have people or find an importer, not only from French market, but from many of the country where the visitors are coming from. And also we have lots of associations or prefecture who want to promote this, not only their sake, but also their tourism, their culture, their craft arts as well, all together.
Right. So that's nice. Even if you don't have a distributor, you can present your own sake.
Yes, this is like, as I mentioned, for me, there are two main reasons I started Salon du Sake with some friends. One, we wanted to change the image of sake and have people understand what is the real Japanese sake. It's still very important for both general public and professionals because even many professionals still think that sake is a spirit. But the other reason is for me to open the French and European market to the sake brewers because I know how hard it is. I receive so much from them, I still do, and I really wanted to help them enter those markets, which are very different because America speaks, even that each state is different, but you all speak the same languages. In France, in Europe, we have like so many languages, so many regulations, so there's need to be someone helping building a bridge between that. And I think Salon du Sake is probably the most effective tool to enter a new market.
Right. Okay. And so are there many consumers participating at the event?
Yeah. As I mentioned, we had like last year, we had almost two-thirds of our visitors that were professionals, being chefs, sommeliers, importers, buyers, wine-shop dealers, also professionals from the tourism industry or craft industry. But still, we have a bit more than one-third of the visitors that are general public, that they all have some passion for Japanese culture, for Japanese sake, or Japanese drinks or food. And
that's great. I thought it was much fewer. So it's
No. Like, I think this year we're going to have like 5,000 visitors, a bit more, at least, and 3,500 professionals, which means that we'll still have 1,500 general public visitors. And over the 3 days, professionals can come Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. But Saturday and Monday are the only 2 days where the general public can come. So we have like different lectures and panel discussions, experience, tasting, especially for the general public on those days.
So for listeners who's maybe in Paris sometime in this fall, so what's the date and how can they attend?
Yes, so this year Salon du Sake will be held on October 5th, 5th and 7th, which is Saturday, Sunday and Monday. It's usually almost every year the same, 1 week before, 1 week later. So you can register in French, English or Japanese on the website salondusake.fr, but we also have salondusake.com, so for foreigners maybe it's easier, but just Google Salon du Sake Paris or France and you'll find it.
Okay. And so I heard that you have served as a chief judge at Sake Selection. So do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. That was a great, great experiment. You know, there's a new trend. We have lots of sake contests all over the world in the various countries, but a very little international sake contest. There was one big in UK. But last year I was hired by actually a Belgium company that is very famous for organizing wine, beer and spirit contests. They've been doing that for more than 25 years, but they knew very little about sake. So they hired me as their international sake specialist, and I had to help them working with Japanese people. They didn't know anything about Japanese habits, but also to meet up some new testing sheets for the contestants, and it went very well. It was held in Mie, just after Salon du Sake. The preparation of the two even at the same time was quite hard, but there were about 700 different sakes, and we had judges from 19 different countries.
Wow.
So I pushed a lot to have those kind of international contests. What is important? Is it to find that the best sake in the world? I don't think so. What is important is to find the sake that have the best chance to be successful in various markets. So that's why I pushed to have judges from Asia, judges from America, judges from Europe, from all continents and all countries, in order to help the contestants and the winner sake to find their markets.
Mm. And in my opinion, I think having that kind of competition itself has a great exposure of sake to the world. So
Yes. And because especially what I like with that company when they hired me is that they organize the contest itself, but also they do a lot of promotion all over the world, and especially with within the countries where the judges come from.
And it's good to know Belgium is now really interested in sake as well.
Yes, well, Belgium sake market is quite small, but that company has a worldwide appearance. So
yeah, they are famous for that competition. I can't remember the original name, but it's an the kind of division of bigger wine competition.
Yes, yes.
Right?
The Mondial du Vin was held in China last year, and recently in Switzerland, and they do it in different countries every year.
Mm.
Maybe one day they will do it in Japan. I don't.
Maybe. Right. So how do you predict the future of the Japanese sake market in France and in Europe?
Well, as I mentioned, the growth has been very quick, even compared to America or Asia. This is quite small, but France is actually one of the largest market in the world. Not France, Europe. One of the largest market in the world. We have. I suppose that over the 5 to 10 next years, the market should be multiplied by 5 to 10.
Wow.
I think. And in Europe, we have like 7 million consumers. So this is probably one of maybe a bit difficult because of all the different countries. But we buy more expensive sake than other regions or worlds. So this is probably a very important market for sake in the future, even if it is still much smaller than the regular America and Asia market nowadays.
Mm. Right. So I think it's still a product to sell, but I think a cultural beverage as well.
Yes.
So
I always explain to people, when you drink sake, you drink it for the quality of the products, but also you drink a part of the culture of the country. You don't need to speak Japanese. You don't need to go to Japan. I do suggest people go to Japan to taste sake, learn Japanese, learn the culture. But within your body, within your taste, you can, your senses, you can taste and enjoy a product that was crafted all on the other side of the world by different people, and you can get a bit of what is Japanese culture.
Right.
You know, in Japan, they use sake to communicate with the gods of Japan. But when you drink it, you can communicate with Japanese culture, Japanese people, just by tasting it. So this is very important, I think.
Right. So how proud the sake brewers are. Once they explain about what they're making, they're so proud and they're so happy about their products. So yeah, you're the one who's communicating that passion to.
Yeah, I'm just trying to build the bridge, but the sake and people are the one that should go on the bridge to meet. Being in France at Salon du Sake or in any restaurants, or being in Japan and in between. I think this is very important. Most part of what we do, we have everyday living, but when you meet a different people, when you drink different, when you eat different food, when you drink different products, your life is much more fuller. It's much more full. It's fuller. I don't know. Sorry, I'm losing my English. But you can expand who you are, what you know, what you feel, what you sense, just by those kind of amazing meetings with the other.
Right. Well, so thank you so much for saying all that. It's really exciting.
No, that's just part of my experience. I was so glad to receive all that, that I just want to share that with as many people as I can.
So what's your plan for the future?
Oh, my plan is, first, of course, Salon Sake is still quickly expanding, and we want to make it even more effective. We have visitors from new countries coming on, and still the French market has, there's a lot to be done. But also, I want to focus more about education for professionals. Now I'm developing a new 3-day course where We don't try to sell any type of sake to anyone, where we teach in French, and this course will be done in France, in Japan as well, because I think this is very important to visit the breweries. And the education and the distribution are the main two aspects of sake market that still need a lot more for the market to develop to the point where it should be.
Okay, so where our listeners can find all this information about the classes and everything?
Yes, well, as I mentioned, most of the information you can find on the Salon Sake website, but you can find us also on the Facebook fan page or on my Twitter, Sylvain Huet. There's an underscore between Sylvain and Huet. Okay. And Salon du Sake Twitter and Facebook homepage, just all the letters together.
Great, so good luck.
Thank you.
All right. So thank you for joining us today, Sylvain.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me, giving me a chance to have that great talk.
Yeah, hopefully you're going to come back sometime.
I will.
All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or kikotema.com. Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays, always available at heritageradionetwork.org and iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.